We've been talking about refuge, trying to understand why take refuge and what the objects of refuge are and then what their qualities are. And so this is, there's a real wealth of information in this section. And the more we learn, the more, you know, we'll understand exactly what the path is that we're following. Because especially when we start talking about the qualities of the Dharma, we'll learn more about exactly what the Dharma does. So when we say, I practice Dharma, we'll know what we're trying to do. And when we talk about the qualities of the Sangha, we'll have an idea of the stages and paths that we will slowly progress through as we practice. And then tonight, especially when we're talking about the qualities of the Buddha, we'll get an idea of where we're going and what our own potential is. So in talking about the qualities of the Buddha, it's talking about what we can become, and so giving us an idea of our own potential, which we don't even know exists. And that's why when we hear this, we go, oh, how do I believe that, you know? It's like because we don't really even know our own potential, what we're capable of. And then also learning the qualities of the Buddha, we'll learn something about the person who's guiding us, you know, the founder of our teachings, and what he taught 2,500 years ago and what all the other Buddhas who continue to appear will continue to teach, and what their qualities are, why they're reliable. So the last time we talked about the qualities of the Buddha's body, qualities of Buddha's speech. You know, and like I said, that tells us something about what other beings have become. It tells us something about what we can become and the kinds of qualities to try and develop within ourselves right now and the kind of potentials that we have that we don't even know about. And so tonight we're going to go more into detail about the qualities of the Buddha's mind. Okay, so if we talk about the qualities of the Buddha's mind in an abbreviated way, we come up with two basic qualities, Buddha's wisdom and Buddha's compassion. Okay, and you'll hear these things a lot, you know, you'll hear wisdom and compassion over and over and over again, because those are the two principal things we want to develop. You'll also hear the method aspect of the path and the wisdom aspect of the path, and these correlate, okay? The method aspect of the path is talking about the determination to be free, the compassion, the altruistic intention of bodhicitta, the different actions such as generosity, ethics, and patience that are done with this altruistic intention. And by doing the method aspect of the path based on compassion, we have what is called the collection of merit or the collection of positive potential. And the chief result that the collection of positive potential brings about is a Buddha's body. Okay. Then when we talk about the other aspect of the path, which is the wisdom aspect, we're talking about the different, you know, meditation on emptiness, the lack of inherent existence. By meditating on that, we'll have the accumulation of wisdom, and the chief result that brings is a Buddha's mind. Okay? So we're having these two kind of parallel strands go up gradually, in terms of we have method and wisdom, okay? In other words, the compassion aspect of the path, the wisdom aspect of the path. Then what you're doing on while you're practicing these is you're collecting or accumulating positive potential by practicing the method aspect, emphasizing compassion. You're accumulating or collecting wisdom by practicing the wisdom aspect of the path. And then the results that those bring are the method, the accumulation of positive potential brings a Buddha's body, and the accumulation of wisdom brings the Buddha's mind. Okay? Now, don't get confused here that we're talking about the qualities of the Buddha's mind and their compassion and wisdom, but compassion is part of the method aspect of the path, so how come the result is the Buddha's mind? Don't get confused that way. Because the thing is that these two intercause each other, but we're just talking about the principal result that they bring. And so you'll keep hearing this kind of talk over and over again. I know these are terms, but it's good if you can understand this because it does come up a lot in the teachings. You know? And then when you come to like tantric symbolism, you know, when you see a male and female in union, what that is symbolizing is the male is symbolizing the method aspect of the path, and the female is symbolizing the wisdom aspect of the path, and the two of them in union is showing that we need to unify both, you know, the method and wisdom, the compassion and the wisdom within our own consciousness to become a fully enlightened Buddha. So they just as they say that for a bird to fly, a bird needs two wings, so to go to enlightenment, we need both sides, the wisdom and the compassion. Okay? We get lopsided if we go to one or the other. So when we talk about the qualities of the Buddha's wisdom, we're referring here to their ability to see the two truths simultaneously. Okay. Now, the two truths are, you know, the ultimate truth and the relative truth, okay, or conventional truth. Conventional truth refers to all the things that appear to us, all the things that function that we work with in our daily life, like the clock and the watch and whoever you live with and your boss and everybody else, okay? Those are all conventional truths. All the functioning things, all the things that appear to us. And then ultimate truths is the way things really exist beyond the appearances. Because the thing is that conventional truths, you know, tables and chairs and popcorn, all appear to us as truly existent. And even they appear to us that way, whereas they aren't really. So on the appearance level, on the conventional level, to us ordinary beings, all these things appear falsely. They appear truly existent. They appear solid and concrete. On the ultimate level, the ultimate truths of those objects is that they're lacking any inherent essential nature that exists independent of other phenomena. Now the thing is, when you're meditating on the path, when you get to high levels on the path, when you do deep meditation on wisdom, you know, the wisdom that's perceiving the emptiness of inherent existence, at the time you're doing that deep meditation, none of these phenomena appear to your consciousness. All you perceive is the emptiness of inherent existence. Then, when you come out of meditation, I'm talking about high-level practitioners, you get all the appearances of phenomena, and they still appear inherently existent to you because your mind still has, like, some stains on it. But because you've realized emptiness, you know, they look this way, but they aren't really this way. Yeah, it's like when we watch a movie, it looks like a real person on the screen, okay? But when we stop and think about it, we know it's not a real person, it's just a movie. So in the same way, you know, a highly realized being, an Arya, when they have this discordance between their meditation and then after meditation time. Because in meditation, they see emptiness directly, but no appearance of chairs and rugs and things like this. Okay. On the other hand, when they come out of their meditation, all these things appear, but they appear truly existent. And so that person can't directly perceive their emptiness at that time. you know. But they know they're empty, so they say, oh, this is like an illusion. It looks truly existent, but it isn't really. It's like an illusion. But at that time, you know, when they're walking down the street, they can't perceive the emptiness of the thing. So you see that they go flip-flop between meditation and post-meditation. Now, the special quality of a Buddha is a Buddha can see both levels of truth at exactly the same time. Okay? So, I mean, this is something a Buddha can do that all the other Arya beings, you know, the highly realized beings, can't do. Yeah, because they go back and forth between the two. But a Buddha can perceive both at the same time. And to boot, when the Buddha perceives conventional phenomena, they don't appear to a Buddha as truly existent or inherently existent anymore. They appear completely dependent arising. Yeah. So, and that's because a Buddha's totally removed that last veil, that last stain across the mind that is causing the discordant appearance. Okay? So when we talk about the Buddha's wisdom, we're talking about this incredible ability to perceive, you know, how things really exist on a conventional level, but they're all dependent on causes and conditions and parts and consciousness and terms and labels and things, but at the same time can perceive, you know, the deeper level in which all the phenomena exist, in that they don't have any inherent existence whatsoever. So it's quite a very special, you know, achievement. Yeah? And so you'll see sometimes the pictures of Lama Tsongkhapa. Yeah, you've seen pictures of Lama Tsongkhapa. He's the founder of this particular tradition. And they'll show him, he'll sit with this hand like this, and then this hand in his lap, okay? Yeah, meditative position, and then this one is called the teaching position. Okay, so what this is showing is that the hand in the meditation position is showing he's in deep meditation on emptiness. And at the same time, he can teach. In other words, he's able to deal on the conventional level at the same time as perceiving emptiness. So that's really like showing symbolically, just through the hand gestures, the qualities of a fully enlightened one. Okay? With me so far? Yeah? So, I mean, this is quite a special quality, I think, of a Buddha's mind. And then when we talk about a Buddha's compassion, we're talking about the loving kindness that a Buddha has for all living beings. So, we've already discussed how a Buddha's compassion is impartial. It goes equally towards everybody, no matter how that person feels towards the Buddha. You know, whether they like the Buddhas or not, or whether they make offerings or not, or have faith or not. From the Buddha's side, the compassion is impartial. And they also say that a Buddha's compassion for us is much stronger than our own compassion for ourselves. That a Buddha cares more about us than we care about ourselves. But that doesn't seem possible. You know, like, how can anybody care more about me than I care about me, you know? And the reason they say that is that even though we care a lot about ourselves to the point of being very self-cherishing, we, in another way, we don't really care about ourselves. For example, we'll eat all kinds of junk food that isn't good for us, even though we know it's not good for us. So at that time, you know, we really don't have much compassion for ourselves because we'll eat in a way that's harmful. And if we look in our lives, we do certain things, even though we care about ourselves, we do certain things that wind up being harmful to ourselves. Yeah? We'll get in accidents, or we'll, we'll beat up on ourselves emotionally. Nobody else needs to do it for us. And so, even though we care about ourselves, we do harm ourselves sometimes inadvertently. Whereas they say with a Buddha's loving kindness and compassion, a Buddha never will deliberately harm us. You know, their compassion is so great that never will there be any intention or action that harms. Okay. now the question comes up, well, if the Buddha doesn't want to harm me, and the Buddha's always benefiting me, you know, how come I'm so miserable? And how come when I'm trying to practice the Dharma, sometimes things even get worse? You know? If the Buddha taught the Dharma to benefit, and I'm practicing the Dharma, and I'm having my mind's completely bananas and my life is falling apart, then what good is the Dharma? And what do we mean that the Buddha's being compassionate for me? Because he's teaching me all these things that are making me stressed out. Yeah. So we have to understand here that from the Buddha side, the Buddha teaches there's no intention to harm. There's only in the intention to benefit. There's all the skillful means. From our side, sometimes we don't understand how to practice properly. And so we go overboard in one direction or another, or we go underboard, you know, and we just kind of get off balance. And so it isn't because the Buddha lacks compassion, it's more because we just aren't well enough familiarized with how to practice, so we get off balance sometimes. Okay? And also sometimes when you're practicing, things get worse before they get better. You know, it's like Ayurvedic medicine. You take it and you get sicker, and then after a while it eventually cures you. Yeah. Whereas with Western medicine, you take it and it cures you right away, and then afterwards you get the side effects. You know, so here, you know, sometimes when we're practicing, it really seems like things are getting worse. You know, we'll be practicing and it seems like, you know, oh, I'm just more selfish than I was before, or I'm less concentrated than I was before, or this, that, and the other thing, or, you know, I'm just completely nervous all of, you know, what we call lung stress, you know, I'm stressed out, and, you know, I'm doing all this Dharma and I can't hold my life together and I'm getting stressed out. And so sometimes, yeah, I mean, things do get worse before they get better, because we're taking a big dose of strong Dharma medicine, and, you know, sometimes we don't know how to put it all into context in our life, and so we do get off balance. Yeah? But that's okay. Yeah? Because everything we learn about ourselves when we get off balance, it's more information, you know, we have our laboratory with us, we're doing research on the nature of mind. So we learn more about ourselves, we learn more about the mind, we learn more about how other people are too, because other people are exactly like us. So the more we can understand our own difficulties and problems and imbalances, the more when other people come to us for aid, we'll understand what they're talking about. Yeah. So when you have difficulties in your practice, you know, don't blame the Buddha. Don't blame yourself. Just recognize that these things happen, and we can slowly get ourselves, you know, more balanced and keep going, and that we can learn a lot from having gone through these things.